Welcome to the Capital News. I'm your host, Alex Caritis. Today is Thursday, April 15th, 2021. Thank you so much for joining me. The title of today's podcast, Initial Claims Below GFC and Government Fuels Retail. So, finally, and it's been a very long time, over a year, that initial claims have been soundly and solidly below the levels that we witnessed during the depths of the great financial crisis. And I've been telling this audience for weeks, if not months, that I was not going to consider initial jobless claims down until we got to that point. Because you can recall, or you can at least understand, how bad things were during the depths of the GFC. And we're talking 650,000, 660,000 initial jobless claims for a few weeks. Again, during the depths, the worst of it. For over a year, we had initial jobless claims well above that figure. And this is just looking at regular state unemployment. This is apples to apples because during the GFC, there was no Nobody Cares Act 1.0 that created the PUA and the PEUC. So we'll get to that report, and we'll look at the numbers. We'll see what took place with the actual numbers for regular state unemployment and combining the PUA program. So we'll get to that. We'll get to the Federal Reserve's balance sheet. Get to some market performance, some news out of China that came across the wires not too long ago. Some macroeconomic data. And some broad-based macro data for here in the States as well, given the title of today's podcast, Government Fuels Retail. But something I just want to point out, there are some reports, some articles out today highlighting that the energy sector here in the U.S. is suffering some serious bankruptcies. Levels that we have not seen in years since you had the mini recession a handful of years ago here in the States. So you can print money, but you cannot print solvency. You can kick the can down the road, you can fill a void for a little bit, but you cannot delay, you can delay the inevitable, but you cannot prevent it. You cannot reverse it, unfortunately. That's just not how it works. And this is going to have an effect. This is jobs. This is debt that is being liquidated. And then we also have to deal with surging M&A, so merger and acquisition activity. Why not? We have all of this liquidity sloshing around. Might as well make some big deals. It's further consolidation, which is the theme of part three in our book, The Cynic's Guide to Investing. If you take one thing out of part three in our book, and we tell you this, understand that it is all about consolidation, and that continues to be what we witness day in and day out. Small businesses getting destroyed. You are non-essential, but the big guys are. And now they're gobbling up other big companies, mid-sized companies. And of course, with this M&A activity, we'll continue to see jobs being shed. How many? Of course, nobody knows, but that is typically what takes place once these deals are underway and finalized. So that will continue to have some ripple effects. But the other ripple effects that we're likely going to witness from these bankruptcies in the energy sector is what is going to happen with respect to supply coming back on the market. Because if these companies are no longer there, or the other players that already exist, are they going to be able to quickly pick up the slack and bring that supply onto the market? Or is there going to be a drag? Because if there's a drag, then we may very well continue to see energy prices continue to move higher, especially if the reopening is very successful, especially if all of this quote-unquote pent-up demand is actually out there and people want to go spend all of this money. They want to drive. They want to go places. So we are far from out of the woods, despite some better appearing numbers on the headlines. So some market performance. Let's look at some of that Chinese macro data. The Chinese economy advanced 18.3% You heard me correctly, 18.3% year over year in the first quarter of this year. Last year it was in the fourth quarter of 2020 it was 6.5%. The market was expecting a gain of about 19%, so falling shy of market expectations, but still a blowout number. And of course, this is because of the base effects as to what took place last year. And we're going to continue to see this pretty much in one economy after the next here in the United States as well. That's why you continue to hear big numbers about GDP for the United States, because of how weak it was last year, and also because of how much money Uncle Sam is throwing into the system. It's not because there's actual productivity, which is the P part of it, gross domestic product. It's not about productivity, it's about how much money Uncle Sam is willing to beg, borrow, print, and spend into existence. And it's just an arithmetic formula, and that's all it is. Okay? But that's Chinese GDP, 18.3% year over year for the first quarter. Also in China, average new home prices in China's 70 major cities rose by 4.6% year on year in March of this year, accelerating from a 4.3% rise in the previous month. Now, we've been warned by Chinese regulators themselves, and we discussed this on a previous podcast, that their real estate market is in a bubble. Now, this Chinese regulator was also pointing the finger at the U.S. economy and the European economy as well. Sort of what I thought was sort of a shot across the bow at the time, and I still believe that to be the case as to what that was, sort of setting up the blame game. If something should happen, if there should be some sort of systemic event somewhere, this Chinese regulator was saying, yeah, we have some problems here at home. A lot of it's in the real estate market. A lot of people are just buying homes. They're not actually living in them, but they're just buying them, bidding up the prices. But if we really have a problem, it's going to be because of those Americans and Europeans, because their economies are completely out of control, and it's one bubble after the next. So we continue to see this with 4.6% year-on-year growth in their home prices. But there's no inflation anywhere, ladies and gentlemen. Understand this. Here at home, U.S. retail sales rise more than expected. Retail sales in the U.S. jumped by 9.8% month over month in the month of March, following a downwardly revised 2.7% fall in the previous month, and easily beating market expectations of a gain of 5.9%. So U.S. retail sales came in at 9.8% month over month, far exceeding market expectations. Now, does anybody care to take a guess as to why this has happened? That's right, the government. Government fuels retail. It's funny money. That's all it is. You didn't have a stimulus check last month. What was retail sales last month? Oh, they were down 2.7%. In the month prior, in January, you got a stimulus check from Nobody Cares Act 2.0. Retail sales were up. This is extremely easy to follow. You spot the pattern? And of course, now with the tax season, and it is tax day, of course, they have extended it, I believe, by a month. But nonetheless, this is traditionally tax day here in the U.S., and a lot of people have already filed their taxes and, of course, have gotten their refunds, which is also contributing to this, no doubt. So Uncle Sam's stimulus checks plus your tax refunds, throw it into the market and see what you get. Industrial production also increased. It was in the green, but below market expectations and well below the rise in retail. So this is likely going to further contribute to an increase in our trade deficits, which are currently at record highs. So much winning, we can't handle it, right? Hashtag winning. We were told we were going to win so much, we were going to scream, please stop. We're tired of winning so much. We're not winning at all, as our twin deficit continues to grow out of control. Twin deficit being our federal budget deficit and our trade deficit. And of course, our national debt is north of $28 trillion and growing by the second. USDebtClock.org if you're looking for more specific data. So we'll watch this. We'll continue to pay attention to what takes place in the retail sector. But most of this is most definitely driven by the funny money. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. And that's something that's, I mean, that is a very simple point. If you should have a conversation or a debate with anybody who might bring up that the economy is very strong, that the stock market is very strong, Oh, really? Simply say, well, what do you think would happen if we pulled out all of the funny money that the Federal Reserve has printed into existence and that the government has spent and borrowed? Do you think everything would be where it is today? That's how simple this is. It's basic common sense, but nobody wants to ask these basic questions. Take all of that out. Where would we be? Nowhere near these levels. And a printing press does not produce production. It does not create sustainable economies. It does not generate a solid and sound business plan. You can print money, you cannot print solvency. And it's the weakest links that are breaking first, and that is a continuation with those bankruptcies in the energy sector. The dollar index is currently at 91.74 on the dollar index. Bitcoin is at $63,000 a coin. Let's see, some dollar strength across the board with some of the major pairs here. Gaining against the British pound by 0.2%, as is the case with the Australian dollar. Off the back of this news, or perhaps off of the back of what took place on the Federal Reserve's balance sheet, which of course we'll get to momentarily, a nice, strong, beautiful rally on Wall Street across the major indexes today. Again, there's no such thing as bad news, terrible news, good news, or great news. It's all fantastic. It's all fabulous. Because if what would traditionally be bad news, the markets will say, well, that just means that there's going to be more stimulus from somebody. Our fiscal authorities, our monetary authorities, maybe both. Hopefully both. That's what they would say. That's what the crack addicts would want. More crack from as many parties as humanly possible. If it's good news, like you see the lower initial jobless claims finally, and retail sales beating expectations, they say, well, that would typically be seen as good news. Okay, we can rally on that. Now it's just everything is just great. Everything is fantastic. The market is beyond a casino. It's a perpetual money-making machine for the time being. But this will come at a big cost. Overnight futures trading, Dow Jones Industrial Average is flat. The S&P 500 is also in the red, down about 0.2%. NASDAQ 100 is down about 0.3%. Cash trade in Japan putting on a slight gain of about 0.1%. A mixed bag today across the pond in Europe. Australian cash trade giving back 0.1%, and Chinese stocks are currently in the green, putting on a gain of about 0.5%. So despite the blowout numbers not meeting or exceeding market expectations, so not a huge rally, but still nonetheless those Chinese stocks putting on a gain currently of 0.5%. On the commodity front, we have WTI $63.47 a barrel. Brent $66.95 a barrel, so obviously very much flirting with that 67 handle. Natural gas $2.66. Gold and silver both had a very nice day. Gold $1,763 an ounce. Silver $25.82 an ounce. Silver had a nice day as well, $4.22 an ounce. And let me just bear with me for 1 second because I do want to bring up lumber. Yes, lumber had another nice day, $1,260 per 1,000 linear board feet. $1,260. Amazing. Another all-time high. This thing is just completely vertical. And don't forget, this increase to lumber prices is adding an additional $24,000 to the price of an average new home build here in the United States, and I'm sure it's just as significant in other parts of the world, which are also experiencing in many places an insane real estate market. And I imagine this is going to continue because you still have mortgage rates near all-time lows. Yes, they have been increasing. Yes, there has been some slight decrease in demand for new mortgage applications. A lot of this is just a function of supply. There's not a lot of supply out there on the market currently. But nonetheless, we will continue to watch this closely. All of these things continue to go up, but we will continue to be told that there is no inflation. And on the bond front, we have Uncle Sam's 10-year junk note yielding 1.58%. We have not been at these levels really since, well, early March. So again, this begs the question, is this just this rally sort of giving off some steam? little just a natural pullback? Or is this going to be some sort of start of a downward trend? Because now this is going to call into question the Federal Reserve's narrative, right? And I want to continue to remind the audience of this, because you have some central banks, such as the Reserve Bank of Australia, when they saw their yields increase, they panicked. They threw several billion dollars into the market, into their bond market, to get those yields back down, because they looked at it and said, oh, that's inflationary. We're concerned about this. It's getting out of control. We don't want our borrowing costs going up, blah, 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 blah. But here, we had Jay Powell, who wants to pretend that he's Joe Cool, and said, oh, we don't care that our yields are going up. No big deal. In fact, that's indicative of the economic recovery, not inflation. So we're perfectly fine with this. So that begs the question, if rising yields is indicative of a recovery of economic growth, then wouldn't falling yields be indicative of an economy that is rolling over, slowing down, stagnating, heading towards contraction, right? I mean, I'm just trying to use some basic common sense here, but what is that level going to be? We're at 1.58%. Nobody came out with any announcements, so clearly that's not it. Maybe 1.55, 1.5, 1.45. What is that level going to be? Or we've got to go all the way back down to 1%. The point I'm making is these people are trapped. It's a joke. It's all a narrative. They will cherry pick the data that suits their purpose and a story. And the biggest narrative that we have to continue to focus on is that of what the Federal Reserve and other central banks are doing. It's all liquidity. That's all it is. That's all it is. These other headlines, yeah, it's something for people to talk about on CNBC, Bloomberg, Fox Business. Okay, it's for them to fill the airwaves. That's all. The real story, and of course they don't talk about the real story, is what the Federal Reserve is actually doing. And again, we will get to that momentarily. Now moving on to initial jobless claims, that report out of the Department of Labor. So for the week ending April 10th, seasonally adjusted, figure comes in at 576,000. Non-seasonally adjusted, the figure comes in at around 613,000. That's quite a big spread. And if memory serves me, that's probably one of the bigger spreads that we've seen in quite a while. But nonetheless, 576,000 is the headline figure, and well below the level seen during the depths of the great financial crisis, and a figure that we have not seen since March of last year. For the week ending April 3rd, continuing claims, seasonally adjusted, came in at 3.7 million. Non-seasonally adjusted, the figure came in at around 3.9 million. For the week ending April 10th, the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program came in at around 132,000, a week-over-week decrease of some 20,000. So taken together with the 576, you're still flirting with a number around 700,000, which would still put us above those GFC figures. So still not 100% out of the woods, but moving in the right direction. Let's hope that this is a trend. Of course, one of the bad things here is the prior week figure was revised upward by 25,000, and that figure is now 769,000. Okay, so unfortunately, we have that upward revision from the prior week, but that also tends to be par for the course. So for all programs, regular state, federal employees, newly discharged veterans, the PUA and the PEUC programs, extended benefits, state additional benefits, and work share gives us a grand total of 16.9 million. This is for the week ending March 27th. Recall that for the aggregate number, this figure lags by a couple of weeks. So again, 16.9 million. This will constitute a week-over-week decrease of 1.2 million. So we continue to see those big swings in this total figure. For a de facto unemployment rate, given the denominator in this report of around 139 million, gives us a de facto unemployment rate of 12.2%, which is still twice the official unemployment rate, which currently stands at 6.0%. And of course, as a friendly reminder to the audience, the Federal Reserve is arguing that the official unemployment rate is not correct. Now, when the Fed first stated that was a few months ago when it was 6.3%, and now it is at 6%. But nonetheless, at that time, Jay Powell claimed that the real rate of unemployment is closer to 10%. Now, that figure, the unemployment rate, is calculated by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. This is the same group of people that calculates the CPI, or inflation figures. So again, this goes back to the narrative as to what the Federal Reserve is going to say. And again, this would have been a very nice question for somebody to ask him. It would have been nice of Scott Pelley in 60 Minutes to ask this of Jay Powell. It would have been nice for the idiot the other day who interviewed Jay Powell to ask him this question as well. Hey, look, you're having a little bit of an issue here with the official unemployment rate. You're saying the numbers don't jive. It's not right. 6.3% isn't right. 6% isn't right. It's closer to 10. This is the same group that calculates the CPI. And you are very focused on that figure, the inflation figure, hitting 2%. That's what you want to see happen. And you're perfectly fine with inflation running hot above 2% for a period of time. Of course, period of time has not been defined, because they don't know, because they're trapped. They're playing a game. How can we trust you, or how can we trust the BLS to calculate the CPI? Who are we supposed to believe? This is a basic question. You don't have to get snooty. You don't have to have an attitude. This is an observation. This is what you said about one official government statistic. And that same agency also calculates another official government statistic. You have an issue with the one. Do you have an issue with the second, or will you have an issue with the second? And if that's the case, who are we supposed to believe? Because this is U.S. taxpayer dollars. We are funding these people to calculate these numbers. If they're not calculating them correctly, then this needs to be resolved. Who are we supposed to believe? BLS? The Federal Reserve? Or neither of you? That's a legitimate and sincere question based off of common sense, connecting the dots, and basic observations as to what has been said. That's what journalists are supposed to do. Hold these people to account. But we don't have that. What we do have is a lot of butt kissing. A lot of praising. Putting these people on magazines, hailing them as heroes of the economy, of the financial system, blah, 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 blah. No real difficult questions. Politicians love them because they don't have to go home and look you in the face and say, we've done messed up. We got to tighten our belts. We can't keep doing this. Oh, no, no politician wants to do that. So let's just gloss over everything. Let's kick the can down the road. Let's beg, borrow, print as much money as humanly possible and have other generations deal with it. And of course, it's one bailout after the next of the American people and of other countries. Dingbat Yellen gave $650 billion taxpayer dollars to the IMF. Don't forget about that little gift, too. $650 billion to the IMF to assist and really bail out poorer and middle-income nations, because they, too, are about to default on their debt obligations. But everything's great. Everything's great. There's the reopening. The vaccine rollout is working wonders, etc., etc., etc. Yet we got to continue to bail out everybody and their mother. Something doesn't quite make sense. And of course, because our retail sales is far exceeding what we're doing here from a production standpoint, we're also bailing out other countries. Because they are producing stuff. They're producing the stuff that we are buying. We're not producing stuff. We're producing funny money. And people say, oh, look, I got all this funny money. Let me go buy stuff that other countries are producing. Okay, so we're just bailing out everybody left and right. And this is not free. It's extremely expensive. And another thing that we're currently contending with is there's a lot of job openings because the economy is opening back up. But nobody wants to go back to work. Businesses that are still around can't find people that want to work. Gee, I wonder why that is. Maybe it's because Uncle Sam has given them the incentive or disincentive to go back to work. Don't want to do it. People are making more. They most definitely were last year because of all the goodies that Uncle Sam was giving away. And now it might be comparable. Hell, some people might even be making less than what they did when they were working. But you have to understand there are other costs associated with going to work. You don't have to deal with the commute. I mean, maybe if it's 10 minutes, it's no big deal. But if it's 30 minutes, 45 minutes, an hour one way, dealing with traffic and all that nonsense, that's gone. Now you don't have to pay for gas oil changes, wear and tear on your vehicle. Maybe when you get to work, some of your colleagues drag you out to lunch or to get a cup of coffee. Now, instead of spending that money, you put it in your pocket. And furthermore, maybe you just didn't like what you were doing. So you're collecting this money, no big deal. Now you can do what you want. So what this is likely going to do, to get some of these people off of the sidelines from collecting Uncle Sam's funny money, these businesses are going to have to raise their wages. Now, for those who are in the deflationist camp or those who are anti-inflation are making the case that you have to, in order to see inflation, you have to see wages go up. Now, to me, inflation is a monetary phenomenon. It happens at the printing press. It's already here. Well, for those who remain holdouts of this, well, you're about to see it. So I don't know what leg they're going to be left standing on once you start to see wages increase to get people off the sidelines back to work. And then the other question you're going to have to ask yourself is, well, what's going to happen when these employers do increase their wages? What are they going to do with their customers? Are they going to increase their costs? Are they going to pass on those increases to their consumers? So prices go up? Or are they going to eat it, meaning their margins go down? I don't think Mr. Market is going to like the latter of that if margins should get squeezed, should go lower, because the market is priced to perfection, as they say, expecting wonders. And even if the businesses are able to pass along some of those price increases, what's that going to do to top-line growth? Because law of demand tells us if prices increase, quantity demanded goes down. You see what's happening here? You see what's unfolding? There is no free lunch. You can make things look good today. You can make them look good tomorrow, maybe even the next day and a little bit further out. But not for forever. This is only buying time. There has been no structural solutions to anything that has happened. In fact, it has gotten much, much worse because of the trillions of dollars that we have thrown into the system. We're propping up and creating zombie corporations. We're propping up a bunch of fraudsters. Again, we talked about that yesterday with the death of Bernie Madoff. So we still have to contend with the fraud cycle. And if Uncle Sam and the Federal Reserve did during the Great Financial Crisis what they're doing now as quickly as they did it, Bernie Madoff would still be in business. That Ponzi scheme would still be running. So can you imagine how many other Ponzi schemes and other fraudulent businesses are in operation right now because of what our fiscal authorities and monetary authorities have done? And this is global. So we'll have to deal with all of this unraveling after the fact. I don't want to be a Debbie Downer, believe me. This is just the reality of it. I want this stuff liquidated. I want this stuff gone. I want the corrections. I want the red ink so we can make the corrections and put out a good product and move forward from there, from a solid foundation. You don't have major corrections if you have an economy that is built on a solid foundation. You have those corrections when you don't. You have those corrections when things seem like they're good on the surface, but when you do a deep dive, they're not. And that's what we continue to see here. And these movements in some of these data points, a lot of it is simply driven by government doing. And that is not a free market economy. That is not a solid foundation. And that's another question. If it is, if they have solved this riddle and these things are now perfectly fine, then why do we have to have taxes? Why can't we just print money? Why can't we just get rid of the marketplace because it's no longer needed? We don't need the stock market. It's a perpetual money-making machine. Get rid of all of that infrastructure. Get rid of all of those people. They don't need to do it anyway because you can print the money and just give everybody what they want and need. Some people will be happy with $1,000 a month, and then they can put in a request. If they need more, they'll get more. There's no negative consequences. That's what we're told. That's another basic question that could be asked. Seriously, too. Because that's what we're told. There's no negative side effects to any of this stuff. And even if there is, the Federal Reserve has the tools in their toolkit to deal with it. It's a bunch of nonsense. Moving on to the Federal Reserve, their balance sheet now stands at a new record high of $7.79 trillion. $7.79 trillion. A week-over-week increase of some $80 billion. So if you were to extrapolate that on a week-by-week basis for the month, we'd be over $320 billion for the month if they keep this pace. Now, of course, the Federal Reserve remains committed to $120 billion per month. That's the floor. That's the minimum. Okay, they come up with these numbers. They pick these numbers out of a hat. Okay, they just make this stuff up. $120 billion, that's what they're doing at minimum. They want to go above that, they'll go above it. Nobody stops them at $120 billion. Why would anybody stop them if they wanted to do more? And again, their quantitative easing program was supposed to be temporary, supposed to be transitory. It's a couple years away from getting a driver's license. Now, inflation is supposed to be temporary or transitory, if it even exists. I don't believe them. Gee, I wonder why. Their quantitative easing consists of purchasing U.S. treasuries and mortgage-backed securities. So despite the fact that we have a runaway housing market, they continue to buy mortgage-backed securities. And nobody asked them that basic question either. Why do you continue to buy mortgage-backed securities? You did that during the Great Financial Crisis because that was kickstarted due to the housing sector. This isn't justification for doing that, purchasing mortgage-backed securities, but you can at least understand it. There was weakness there. It was an emergency. What's the emergency now? Home prices are at all-time highs. Mortgage rates near all-time lows. Stock market hitting record after record after record. What's the problem? Why is everybody concerned? Again, other basic questions not asked, not answered. Initial claims below GFC, government fuels retail. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Caritas. Godspeed.